This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is not an original thought, but worth repeating. We're all sinners. The quality and quantity of those sins may vary, but there are black marks on all of our records. And as our records get longer and longer, thanks in no small part to the indelible memory of the web, it's clear that our pasts can come back to haunt us and exact payments that may, in some cases, be worse than the original sins. One recent and very public example, Marilee Jones, a well-known figure at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, as Dean of Admissions, much beloved for her caring, engaging personality and for her national campaign to combat the stress of college admissions. But after 28 years and a distinguished career at MIT, she was asked to resign after she committed a terrible mistake, committed when she was first hired. She claimed 3 degrees that she never earned. In a statement, she confessed she lacked the courage to come clean on her own. Is there a youthful indiscretion in your past? Did you or might you still have to pay for it? Should there be a statute of limitations? Later in the hour, unearned applause, the phenomenon of the praise culture in the workplace. But first, youthful indiscretions. Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson joins us, as she does every other Thursday. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. If you're haunted by a moral debit on your permanent record, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Amy Dickinson joins us today from our bureau in Chicago. Always nice to have you on the program, Amy.
Hi, Neil. Let me just start by saying that I hope the records have been expunged.
I'm sure all of yours have, and mine too. But let's start with Marilee Jones. The punishment for that long-ago sin might seem severe, but some might say she perpetuated the crime by failing to fess up.
Well, and in her case, evidently, she not only failed to correct this error, she's over the years chose to compound it. She actually added, she piled on a couple of degrees after that initial deception. And she, you know, made a terrible choice to do that. I don't even know if I would call that a mistake. That's not really a mistake. I think that's a choice.
And in that case, youthful indiscretion might seem a little bit light to describe what she did. I mean, this is no small thing.
Yeah, and actually, I can understand why she did it initially. She was she didn't have a degree. She actually, as it turns out, she did have a degree.
Yeah,
it appears, but from a very obscure college. And here she was at MIT applying for a job. Ironically, it was an administrative, a sort of a clerical job where no degree was required. But I think in that hothouse academic environment, she chose to create a degree for herself from a more prestigious school than the one she'd gone to. So it was very unfortunate. And then over time, evidently, she added a couple more degrees onto that. So she clearly thought about it and made it more than one poor choice.
Was there the beginning, but beyond that, was there a logical point at which she might have said, wait a minute, I should come clean here?
Well, I'm sure this is something that probably weighed very heavily on her. After all, the business she was in, admissions, where your credentials are very meaningful. I think that it was clear from what I read about her that she had probably thought about it many times over the years. And I don't know. I mean, honestly, the time to come clean, because she was in her last position for a very long time. This is why she was never really questioned. She had been at MIT for such a long time that people there felt that they knew her record. Yeah, I think she should have attempted to go in there and correct it, sure, rather than perpetuate it, certainly.
Well, we want to engage listeners in this conversation because I think it's not an uncommon thing. We just got this email. There was actually Ed writing on our blog. I just completed a supplementary application that asked a lot of questions requiring me to divulge everything. I want the job so much I laid it out for them from the misdemeanor possession charge 30 years ago to a loan default to my speeding ticket in 2000 to a forced resignation. I don't know if I'll get the job, even though they did offer it to me before the supplemental application. The advice I took was to be completely honest, even though I had great misgivings about doing so. If I'm judged too harshly, I certainly learned something about the workplace that I didn't understand before.
Wow, that's fascinating, because he raises the question of, should you offer information about yourself, even if you haven't specifically been asked for it? And I think it's a marginal thing. I mean, honestly, that list sounded sort of long, although when you think about it, what's a speeding ticket here and this there? Although the possession thing makes me think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he's trying to make the list so he's sort of burying the lead there. I might put the possession sort of in the middle there, so they might not notice that.
The advice that I know you're going to offer to a lot of people is that it's the same thing we learn about politics here in Washington all the time. The original crime may be bad enough. It's the cover-up that's worse.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. This is all a question. You know, it's like Merrill Lee Jones said, it's a question of courage and integrity. And I think all of us can understand that people make mistakes. It's a question of what you do next. Do you react with integrity?
Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And again, like our earlier commenter, you can join the conversation on our blog. That's at blogofthenationnpr.org/blogofthenation, all one word. AJ in Phoenix also wrote in on our blog, at age 20, I was arrested and convicted on a marijuana charge. That was back in 1973. I've paid for it ever since. The 6 months in jail weren't the worst of it by a long shot. Now more than back in those days, these things follow us around all over the world like an electronic age marks of Cain.
Oh, and this is incredible. 1973.
Yeah.
I mean, we absolutely need to think about this. I know that that people, for instance, attempting to enter the military, and of course we need people in the military right now,
mm-hmm.
and this kind of restriction over fairly minor offenses is preventing a lot of people from advancing in the military.
Let's see if we can get a caller in on the conversation. This is Miriam. Miriam's with us from Appalachian in New York.
Yes. I unfortunately have a black mark on my record, which I didn't even do. And my real contention is, how can I get it off? About 10 years ago, I was hit with a shoplifting charge when I asked a clerk for permission to go to the bathroom, and I didn't realize I was carrying goods when I bolted out of the store. And I just threw my purse and everything at her and left. When I came back, there was a cop who made out a summons for me, and there was no going back. I had to appear in court, and I had no further time off from work for any future appearances, so I had to plead nolo contendere. Now, that means that it's not actually a conviction, but it's following me around. It has ruined opportunities as an insurance agent. I have had the state of Ohio telling me I'm not moral enough to sell insurance, and other states have followed suit. When I try to get other jobs, I have a feeling, even though I say I have no convictions, that this nolo contendere thing is following me around, ruining my opportunities. What can I do? The state I was living in, Delaware, doesn't expunge records for people who are not minors.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really something. I'm not a lawyer. I wonder if
I might know something.
Yeah, no,
so
I
there
wish
must be
I
something
did.
On your record, Amy.
Yeah, right. No, that's just awful. I don't know if you've spoken with a lawyer, but I would love to think that there was a way to present this so that it didn't repeatedly haunt you. That's terrible.
The state of Delaware is willing to at least pardon me, but that doesn't take it off the record and make it not exist.
Well, and the idea of being pardoned for something that you contend you didn't do is also hard to take.
Yeah, it is. But yeah. You know, I'm, any port in a storm, you know, I'm a person who currently is looking for work.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine any line of work where you have to be licensed could end up being an issue for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think anything that these days people are doing background searches that are easily facilitated by the internet. And I believe it's out there haunting me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know what to do about this. I don't know what you know people have done in the past.
I guess maybe the pardon may be the only route to go. I wouldn't know. I think probably Spiro Agnew is the one who's destroyed that whole Nolo Contendere thing. Yeah.
He ruined it for all of us.
Yeah. The trouble is when you say, I am not a crook, all they hear is the word
know.
Crook.
Right.
Well,
oh, that's
so
terrible. Terrible.
Good luck, Miriam.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get, this is Amy. Amy's on the line with us from Rockford, in Michigan.
Yep. Hi, Amy. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Hey.
I've got a good one for you, though. It doesn't sound nearly as devastating as the last caller. But 17 years ago, I was taking a trip with my then-boyfriend, now-husband, in Massachusetts, got my first and only speeding ticket, and it was apparently sent to an old address that my mother no longer lived at because I was in college at the time, and I had assumed it had been taken care of, went in to renew my driver's license this year, early, of course, because I am about as straight and narrow as you can get, and found out my license had been suspended.
Yeah. Because of that long-ago unpaid ticket?
17 years.
Wow. And I assume you'd forgotten about it by this
point. I thought it was a mistake. I thought it was a joke or my identity had been stolen or something. But nope, it had been suspended. And the thing that kills me is they could find me this many years later, and I've moved. I mean, I'm not even in the same state several times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could find me that many years later in that many states.
So we already blamed Spiro Agnew. This case, I guess we're blaming Google.
I think so.
And that's another case where that sort of thing, as small as it is, could come to really, really haunt you if you're undergoing a job search right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I guess the only lesson there is even if you thought you got away with something scot-free, it'll come back and get you. Yeah.
Think again.
Good luck, Amy, and we'll send you a bus schedule.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more with Amy Dickinson and, statutes of limitations on crimes of long ago. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Coming up, the so-called praise generation at work. Jeff Zaslow joins us a little bit later. Right now, Amy Dickinson is with us. She writes the syndicated Ask Amy column for the Chicago Tribune. This hour, our focus is on paying for past sins. We all make mistakes, but when you really mess up and get caught, is there a statute of limitations on youthful indiscretions? Should there be? If there's a sin that from your past that you paid for or are still paying for, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and at our blog, several listeners confess their own sins of youth and the price they paid for them. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. And Amy, we started out talking about the dean of admissions at MIT who inflated her resume and got caught for it. She is hardly the only one. You think of George O'Leary, the football coach, who lost a job at Notre Dame, perhaps the most prestigious job in college football, because he overstated things on his resume. And you wrote a column recently about a football player, a much younger man, who seems to be rid of his youthful indiscretions, committed all of 3 years ago.
Right. This is a guy named Greg Olsen, tight end, first-round draft pick for the Chicago Bears. And when he was 19 years old, 3 years ago, a long 3 years ago, according to him, he and some other football players and some other young men from his university recorded a rap song, which is neither rap nor song, as far as I'm concerned, but just it's absolutely vile, vile statement, a very misogynist, horrible, nasty. And he just, you know, got a multi-million-dollar signing bonus to join the Chicago Bears. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't be permitted to play football, but I sort of want to hear more from him about he's apologized, but I feel like 3 years isn't ancient history, and I would like to hear more from him about what he did, why, and how he feels about it now.
So there are limits on forgive and forget, and let's move on. We want to make sure that we've moved on.
Well, my point is I guess I do this at home, too. I'll say, I'm all about forgiveness when I'm ready. You know, I'm not quite ready. But, you know, one thing it really makes me think, because these, you know, very, very ancient, commissions from 17, 18, 19, 20 years ago, it just makes me think that now in the workplace where you can trace people's histories down to the smallest detail, mm-hmm. you know, in a way we're rewarding people who are very risk averse.
Yeah.
Because the only person who can make it through that process is somebody who, it's good to have people in your midst who take chances, who were rebellious when they were young, who did things a little outside of the norm. But this process now, where we can trace everything, it really rewards people who are very risk averse.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Shannon. Shannon with us from Kansas City.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I want to be free. I want to make a confession. My very, very first call-in that I ever made to an NPR affiliate in Kansas City, it was regarding information about a friend of mine who had taken a trip to Haiti for volunteer work. And I, wanted to, give a really good plug about how she had, done this really great thing. But after the fact, I realized, I didn't get her permission, and usually I get people's permission before I, want to talk about something or offer information, and I didn't. And to this day, she's not talking to me. So, that's my confession. I don't know. I think a nice suggestion for the gal with the problem of the degrees, the false degrees. Maybe, this is kind of maybe too Hollywood, but maybe she could go, back to school and get those degrees. But, that's completely, up to her. And I think, the other question I have is, today, you're right. I mean, I think it is great that people can't, be able to lie like that, back in the, since like in the old days. But at the same time, on the other side of that pancake, I do believe that people are very, very timid and,
right.
I'm not sure we want to go all the way to encouraging lying, though.
Right. And
yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
I mean, people do, they're some of the greatest American stories are about reinvention. And people who have had the opportunity to reinvent and do reinvent. And one of the things we're probably losing in this age is the idea that one can move completely beyond their own past, reinvent, and create a new a new present and future for themselves.
Yeah, isn't that so? There was an idea about America that if you messed up somewhere, like Ireland or Germany, you could move here and reinvent yourself. Or if you messed up in New York, you could move to Ohio or California and reinvent yourself.
Exactly. I mean, that's sort of what it's all about. And this is what I mean when I say that we're tamping down some of this this spirit, that we value so much. It's we're going to lose some of it.
Comment, though, on the other side. This from Laura from our blog. I can't say I have any sympathy for those who get caught in their lies. I have a hard enough time moving up the ladder in my life with my hard-earned and spotless record. It infuriates me that I could be competing with people who are making up their unearned qualifications.
Well, I don't blame her.
Yeah.
It's indefensible.
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, and good luck with your friend, Shannon.
Oh, yeah, I hope she forgives me, but that's up to her.
Okay.
Bye.
Here's Juliet from our blog. On the long-term consequences of lying, I remember being 12 years old and realizing that the little embellishment I routinely added to my stories about myself were adding up. I had to keep track of what I said to whom so that I could remain consistent, and it was getting impossible to manage. At some point, I decided to stop embellishing my life stories with falsehoods, but now, more than 20 years later, I still find myself at times thinking, is that consistent with everything else I've said? Then I realize I've told the truth. There's no reason to keep everything on, keep track still. I wish I'd never developed a habit that required me to mentally check on whether my words were true or false.
Well, you know, one of the issues with young people with MySpace pages is that there was just a story about these three young, quite accomplished, Ivy League educated women who were basically smeared by false postings on MySpace pages about them, could not get a job, can't get employed, because now people are able to create false MySpace issues. And, you know, we're really, especially in the workplace, going to have to figure out how to use our access to everybody's previously hidden lives.
Let's go to Krista. Krista with us in Salt Lake in Utah.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I got a crazy past following me. About 17 years ago, I got set up by a friend who was, he'd gotten busted by the Navy for drugs, and so he called me and convinced me to find something for him, and I did, and I got arrested and spent time in prison and have since come out, haven't touched drugs in God knows how long, and I'm trying to get licensed as a social worker because I really want to be able to help people, and I can't because of my felony record. It follows me every time I have to put that down on a job application. People kind of look at you, and they don't even bother to get details a lot of times.
And did you really? And so you were just this was a false accusation.
Well, actually, I did get it for him, and I did my time. He set me up. He had gotten arrested, and
so he
asked me to get some for him because he had to get himself out of his own charges.
Now, if you lived in Washington, of course, you could run for mayor and be elected. So you have a future. But you know what? That's so unfortunate because, of course, somebody with your past probably has a lot of insight and a lot to offer. And again,
I actually have helped. I was a mentor when I was in Rhode Island. I was a mentor for women coming out of prison to help them to readjust into society. So they were really happy to have my background there.
Right.
I just can't get licensed, and I can't work with children. I wanted to volunteer in the Guardian of Items office to be a child advocate. And they what was ironic about it, they said, well, if you get your record expunged, we'll take you, even though we know you've got this record.
Wow. But on paper, you had to be clean on paper.
Yeah, and it's like, well, if it's the same thing, I mean, I'm still the same person. Mm-hmm. How am I any different just because it's on paper saying, okay, now we'll just forgive this?
Well, a lot of this has to do with liability, too. Employers now, you know, if you hire somebody with a felony conviction, even if it's ancient, if you hire somebody, for instance, to be a teacher and something happens, you know, there's a huge liability issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, Krista, good luck.
Thank you.
Here's an email, and this slightly off subject, but not really off subject. This Katie from our blog. My youthful indiscretion is one that many young women make, an unwanted pregnancy that ended in an abortion. While I never thought twice about my decision, I'm not sure what reaction my future husband, whoever it might be, would have if I were to tell him. How do you tell someone you love you made such a big mistake with irreversible consequences, and how do you ask for forgiveness when you aren't sure you need it?
Oh, I love this question, not for what she's going through, but I've received this question in my column before, and it is really, really tough. I honestly believe that when you're entering into a marriage, that you need to know the absolute truth about each other. But I understand when it comes to this particular issue with religious and other issues, it's hard to ask forgiveness, as she said, for something that you don't feel you need to be forgiven for. But this is part of your story. And I think a big part of being intimate with someone is telling them your whole story.
Mm-hmm. And is a prospective spouse not involved in the original pregnancy, is that somebody appropriate to be asking forgiveness of?
Well, exactly. And I think she's fixed on the correct issue. You know, what if he said to her, I forgive you, and she said, well, I don't need to be forgiven, you know. But it is something that I do happen to believe that people need to tell the absolute truth when they're intimate in a marriage. It's just, you have to, and it's hard. I know it.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Craig. Craig with us from Central Iowa.
Yes, my name's Craig. I'm a convicted felon, and I teach at the college level.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of have a question where I've never stated that I'm a convicted felon. I've done prison time for the way that I have to apply for jobs. Mainly, I'm applying with resumes, and it's not a question that's normally asked. And I wonder if that's going to bite me down the road sometime.
A sin of omission in this case. So.
What's that?
In other words, they didn't ask the question, you didn't answer it, but you're wondering if it may come up later.
Exactly, and if it does, I don't know what consequences could actually happen. I mean, they didn't ask, I didn't tell them. I don't know if I'm responsible to if I have to tell them. I'm not told that I have to tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to have my record expunged, but in the state of Iowa, it doesn't really matter. They can't expunge your record, and if you are pardoned, it's still on your record. It doesn't go away. Therefore, doesn't mean anything if you actually have it, you know, if you actually go through with the process and spend the amount of money that, mm-hmm. that you have to spend to have that done.
You know, this is an issue where I feel like, yes, you need to tell your wife or your prospective partner, your intimate partner, that you are a convicted felon. No, you do not need to tell your employer unless you're asked. I mean, we all fill out applications. I think the last job I got, I was asked that.
To make this long story short, what happened was, this was about 10 years ago, when I was out of prison, I moved directly into a college dorm, I received two bachelor's, then I moved to another major state university, received my master's while teaching full-time as a graduate assistant, then I moved from there a couple more times, and I've got married during the process and had children, and everyone in my life knows, you know, mm-hmm. everyone pertinent knows, except for, you know, my employer, of course.
And I think that word pertinent is what Amy was...
Sure.
Craig, good luck wrestling with this. I suspect this is not the last time you're going to think about it.
I'm sure not. Thank you very much.
We're talking about youthful indiscretions with Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Vanessa from our blogs writes, research suggests that disclosing negative information before it is discovered in another way reduced the effect of that information and can actually make the individual seem honest.
Right. I agree. Although I think, again, it's a matter of degree. If you, for instance, if you're on a blind date, mm-hmm. you're not going to want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I would actually say in a job interview, it would be all right to mention something, not in an interview, but as you got along the process, it would be all right to mention some of these things and to ask, you know, what impact do you think this has on my possible employment? I'm really interested in being here. I want to be very, very honest with you. Yeah, I could see that.
Here's an email from Craig in Ohio, in Ohio. Listening to your topic today, I'm reminded of the time I spent working at Theater Communications Group in New York City. One of my jobs was to read over resumes that actors had sent to us. I'm sure many listed plays they had never really done and characters they'd never actually played. My favorite was the young woman who listed the play Come Back, Little Sheba, and that she'd played the part of Sheba. She should have done
dog.
Her homework. Sheba is the dog.
Oh, well, you know, I'm sure in her head, she was in that play.
Hey, that's acting.
Right. What do you want?
Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing I love about this topic is that I have a big high school reunion coming up. And as I think about youthful indiscretions, I think there's a tight group of people in my hometown who are just gathering up information.
Yeah. Now, let's see if we get one last call in. Elizabeth. Elizabeth with us from Sacramento. Just have a minute or so, Elizabeth.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm driving, so I'm going to keep my eye on the road as we talk. 30 years ago, I made porno movies. And since then, after a few years of therapy and getting myself together, I went to college. I graduated with honors. I've had some great careers. And about 2 years ago, just for fun, I decided to, I guess it's called ego surf. Mm-hmm. I went in Google and Googled my name. And lo and behold, there it comes up, this name, doing all these movies, even though I had a screen name for some.
I was going to say, it wasn't your real name, was it?
No, but evidently the people I was working with knew my real name, so and so I'm under both my screen name and my real name, and here I am, you know, a fine, you know, 55-year-old respectable woman with a family. I've got this in my background that obviously I don't tell people, mainly because it's not pertinent, and it's quite a little skeleton in my closet.
Wow, I love it. Not quite a skeleton, though, huh?
No.
Well, it seems to be getting flesh by the moment.
Oh, my gosh, I love that.
And what I do, I'm sort of compiling information.
Very quickly, Elizabeth.
Oh, to make a article or a book out of this. And so I emailed all the other women with the same name.
Well, good luck with the project, Elizabeth. And Amy, thank you, as always. Ask Amy of the Chicago Tribune. This is NPR News.